Bird on a Wire Productions presents The Lost Carnival, Installment 1. A present from the past. I'm sitting here in the office at the back of my house, staring at a wax cylinder. My name is Arthur Bird and I make radio documentaries for a living. And what's odd is that I'm surrounded by the most up-to-date audio technology that I use every day to create these shows, and here in my hands, among it all, is this ancient bit of recording technology the size of a couple of tins of beans, I suppose. If I'm honest, when I first saw the thing, I had no idea what it even was, until I read the letter that came with it, and then I managed to get hold of an old cylinder player complete with this fantastic trumpet-style speaker here. And by putting the cylinder just so, I managed to have a listen.
Is anybody there? Is anybody there? My name is Papa Wanshanu, and I'm sitting in the attic of our house. It's the middle of the night, and everyone else is asleep, though I don't know how. For tomorrow we set off on a trip around the world that could save us, or it could break us. My father runs a carnival, the most beautiful and magical carnival the world has seen. Oh, I do wish you could see it for yourselves. But recently, every time we stage our wonderful carnival, something goes wrong. The gas lights go out, or the performers all fall ill at the same time, as if they've been poisoned. We suspect, well, I suspect, as my father is too kind to think ill of anybody, that we're being sabotaged. If you want my opinion, it's the work of the birds, but my father gets upset when I mention it. Anyway, tomorrow then, at dawn, all these packed boxes and costumes and cases will set off, with us two of course, around the world, out of reach of those awful, treacherous people. I must go. This wax cylinder is nearly full. Wish me well, dear listener, whomever, wherever, and whenever you are.
So that's how it began, or how it begins, I suppose, with a wax cylinder hand-delivered to my door on Christmas Day, all parcelled up in pretty green paper, without any clue as to who'd actually left it there. And though it was Christmas, there was no snow on the ground, so no handy footprints to follow. Real life is rarely as convenient or intriguing as made-up mysteries. Though, having read the letter that came in the parcel, perhaps I shouldn't be too quick to judge. This is what it says. Dear Mr. Bird, you don't know me, but I know of you, and more importantly, I know your work. Time and again, you've shown yourself capable of finding out remarkable things. I wonder what you'll be able to find out about the story that begins on this cylinder. You are clearly a most resourceful fellow, and I trust that should you apply yourself in the ways I know you can, then you will be rewarded with one of the strangest tales of your career. Should you pursue this story, I am sure our paths will cross further down the trail. If not, I hope you don't mind my remaining somewhat in the shadows, for my own stake in these matters is of no small consequence to myself and those around me, and disclosing too much too soon might prove rather deleterious to my endeavours. Merry Christmas. Whoever wrote this clearly knows what I do, but it's not that hard to find out about me making radio programmes, and in truth, I'm a little too weary after working so hard recently to get too excited by some melodramatic cloak and dagger shenanigans with anonymous letters and the like. But still, I am intrigued, if only because I happen to share my name, Bird, with the family that caused that little girl so much distress. And there is something about her voice that does call out to me from all those years ago.
That we're being sabotaged. If you want my opinion, it's the work of the birds. But my father gets upset when I mention it. Anyway, tomorrow. tomorrow then, at dawn.
As it happens, I did plan to take some time off after Christmas and into the new year. So I'm going to do some digging, put some pictures up on my Facebook page perhaps, make some recordings and see where this takes me. If it takes me anywhere at all. Well, I know for most people, first place to start on something like this would be the internet, and I'll get there, I'm sure, but I confess I'm something of an old-fashioned type, so I'm heading to the big bookshop in town, see if there's anything in here that can help me. Here we go. Hundreds and hundreds of books as far as the eye can see. Now, I think the place to look first is over here in entertainment. Let's have a look. We've got books on music and television and film, yeah, and yeah, this is promising. Down here at the end we've got a couple of books on circuses. I'm not even sure I know the difference between a circus and a carnival. What is a carnival compared to a circus? Yeah, I don't know. There's not much here, though, on... Well, there's nothing here, actually, about carnivals, unless I'm not seeing it. Let me just look at this circus book in the bibliography in the back. Sometimes you can find some books that they've looked at on a related subject. Here we go. There we are, a couple of books. One, A History of British Carnival Families in the 20th Century. That looks very promising, and also A European History of Carnival, both by the same author, Dr. Charlotte Burton, published by the University of Newcastle Press. So I don't know if she's up there, I don't know if she's still alive even, but it says 2009 for the later one, so it's pretty recent. Okay, let me just make a note of her name, and yeah, it shouldn't be too hard to track her down. Wouldn't think. Things are looking up.
Hello, Dr. Burton's phone.
Hello there, is Dr. Burton available, please? Hello there, my name's Arthur Bird. I emailed you the other day and you kindly emailed back and said I might trouble you for 5 minutes of your time.
Sorry,
I'm making a programme about carnivals and...
Oh, yes, I recall, yes. Go ahead.
First off, I suppose, I mean, it's a word that's bandied around quite a lot, but what is a carnival compared to, say, a circus or a fairground, perhaps?
Well, the thing is that carnivals mean very different things to different people, again, different countries and cultures, and the origin, the etymology of the word, of course, is Latin, from carnivare, which... Carne meaning meat and levare to leave off. So it was connected to the period of Lent. So carnivals, as we imagine them in that sense of street parades and that dressing up and the liberating of oneself, was all connected to that period of time. But then, of course, it turned in. They became very different, and places like North America adopted it, and it referred more to a kind of travelling show.
So, from what I can gather, they're a kind of cross between a circus and a fairground, in that they don't have as many rides as a fairground, but they might have more of the strangeness.
Yes, absolutely. And what they have in common is they were often run by families.
And was there much rivalry between the different families?
Oh, yes. As you can imagine, this was a really intense, fiercely fought battleground, you know. They travelled to the same places. There was a huge, fierce rivalry. You know, they would dispute territories and tours and the astounding acts that they had. And
I've been led to believe that there might have been sabotage even between the different families, the different organisations that were on the road and in competition with each other.
Oh, I'm sure there was much skullduggery and underhand dealings. Oh, yes, indeed.
There's one particular family that I'm very interested in. This is how I've come into this. It's a family called the Ingenue, I think that will be spelled I-N-G-E-N-U-E-S. Although another person I've heard about is English, there might well be some kind of French connection there, I suspect. The daughter who...
I can stop you there, sir. We have a vast archive here, and what there is to know, I certainly know, but there's definitely, undisputedly, no information on such a thing. I think you're barking up the wrong tree. Thank you. Good day, sir.
No, hi. I have to say, I was pretty taken aback by that phone call with the academic there. She was so very helpful, and then all of a sudden I mentioned the Ingenue family and she clams up. Perhaps stranger still, I got an email a little later from somebody in the same department, one of her colleagues, asking me not to reply to the email in case she saw it, but suggesting that I drive up and meet him in a cafe, that he had something to show me. But it must remain a secret between the two of us. I know nothing more than that. He told me where to meet him and when, so I'm driving up there now, and we'll see what comes of this. Okay, here we are. Plum's Kitchen. This is the place, I think. Excuse me, is it Mark?
Yes, it is. It is.
It's Arthur.
Yes. Hello, Arthur.
Yes. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Have a seat.
Thank you. How was your journey?
Well, it took me a little while, but it was a good straight train journey. I mean, it's a nice place. I've not been here before, but yes, it's rather good. Have you come a long way?
It's a couple of hours in the car. It wasn't too bad.
Right, okay. The day's nice.
So tell me, how did you find my email?
Can I get you a drink, gentlemen?
Can I get you anything? It's on me.
Oh, well, in that case, I'll have a hot chocolate, please.
I'll have an Americano, please.
And anything to eat?
No, thank you.
No, not for anything. Thanks anyway. So tell me, first of all, I sent the email to your boss. How did you come across it?
Well, I'm rather ashamed to say, Arthur, that as part of my job, I tend to filter through her emails. And I know I shouldn't really, but things have been a little bit strange in the office recently.
How so?
Well, a number of weeks ago, just before Christmas, we had a visit from these two rather strange men.
Strange?
Well, they were just unusual visitors to the office.
I mean, this is an archive of old carnivals and fairground
circus
materials.
Yes.
But it's an academic institution, isn't it?
Absolutely. And so to have a visit from these rather, well, I might be maybe being rather snobbish about it, but they were rather uncouth. And anyway, they sort of seemed to sort of bustle her into this room, and I could see there was quite a heated debate going on. And I went over and just checked that everything was all right, and was dismissed rather quickly.
By your boss?
By my boss, and these two rather threatening men.
And so you were watching through a window, or could hear?
I could hear. I mean, I made sure I was quite near the door, and I could hear, because I was a little bit worried about her.
So what was the subject of their conversation?
Well, they were talking about this family, the Ingenues, who were basically the sort of carnival fraternity royalty. They were the top draw of the carnival world, and they were a marvellous, marvellous family. But they were wanting her to erase all this material, to completely get rid of it.
When you say erase, what do you mean?
All material, take it out of the archive, to just delete it as if it never happened.
And your archive is the preeminent archive in the country, and certainly maybe Europe, and possibly the world.
Well, we have more material than anybody. It's an absolutely marvellous archive. And every single bit of information about this family has to be covered. They were crucial in the 20s, absolutely a marvellous, marvellous phenomenon, really.
So to erase it from your archive was effectively getting rid of them from history?
From history, yes. And I just felt really, Arthur, that I couldn't let that happen.
So what happened? They were putting pressure on her, were they?
Well, yes, it certainly sounded like that. They were quite threatening. You could hear. I mean, they were raised voices. It was... It was very out of the ordinary for our quiet little office.
Have you any idea who they were?
I've no idea at all, but they left me feeling very cold.
But your boss, what did she do then? When they left, what happened next?
Well, she seemed rather flustered and very quickly grabbed her coat and left the office. I mean, early, 20 minutes early.
I spoke with her, it was only when I mentioned the Ingenue family that she became very closed down. So it's very interesting that you're telling me this now. So what's she done with the material?
Well, that's the thing. As soon as they'd gone, she locked it all away in the safe. And it was quite a large amount of material. Notes, posters, all kinds of weird and wonderful things.
Have you anything?
Well, I feel very, very uncomfortable about, and I'm trusting your discretion here. But I have gone in the safe, and I've taken it. And I brought it here to show you. I mean, it really is extraordinary. But she's on leave for a week. So if I can get this stuff back...
Before she returns?
Yes, we can maybe do it so as if she doesn't know.
That's
no idea.
Extraordinarily brave of you. Given that these guys don't sound terribly pleasant, and they've certainly done a job of work on your boss, why... I'm very grateful, but why are you bringing me this stuff now?
Well, I suppose it's a philosophical thing, but this is about history, Arthur. This needs to be told. This story needs to be out there. This is the Ingenues we're talking about, the greatest carnival family in the world. And you can't just erase it from history. This has to be out there. It's censorship. I won't be cowed. I won't be bullied, Arthur.
You clearly feel very strongly. I have to say, I'm very excited. I'm very grateful. Can I say that first of all? But can we have a look in the bag? Okay, what have we got here?
Well, first of all, this is a rather gorgeous poster from the 20s. Isn't that superb? Look at the colours.
Oh my word, that is absolutely beautiful. Here we are, the Ingenue Carnival at the top. It's very classy, isn't it?
It's absolutely beautiful. You can see that they really did spend a lot of money on the production values. It really was marvellous.
And this is advertising a tour from 1925.
Yes, that's right.
What strikes me of these beautiful pictures here, I mean, all these wonderful acts that they're advertising, the painted lady there, and it just immediately captures that spirit of those old carnivals, slightly mysterious, slightly strange, but wonderful. I mean, we've got the kind of things you would expect. The bearded lady, look at that, that's extraordinary, full face of long hair. Who are your favourites?
Well, I particularly like this one. I mean, it's really not very, you know, good. But this young man here was known as the Badger Boy. And he could dig. He had extraordinary hands. And he could dig.
So he would actually dig a hole
in front of the audience. And it was not, it was like really quite ferociously quick. But what I gather, basically, is that he was in a small cubicle and would literally dig his way out.
Yeah. You can see on the pictures that they've painted, I guess, or drawn fur on his hands.
Well, that's right. I mean, he was, if it sounds bizarre, but he was like a badger.
There's an awful lot of cuttings as well you've got over here.
There's some tickets here as well, which are rather...
Look at that. Aren't they fantastic?
Yeah. Like I said earlier, they were the royalty of the carnival world. And one of the things that really interests me is that they just disappeared almost overnight. They just vanished like one of their illusions into thin air.
This last thing over here, what's this? This canister.
Now, if I can just... I don't think it's been opened. There we go. Have a look at that.
So get the lid off there, and is this a wax cylinder?
It is.
Have you heard this?
Sadly, no. We have no method of playing it.
This is definitely something to do with the engine.
You can see there's a small inscription just on the wood there.
I can't wait to get this home.
Well, as long as you promise me that you'll safeguard this, because this is history right here.
No,
good Lord.
What's the matter?
It can't be that. That looks awfully like one of the men who came into the office.
In the cafe?
No, over there, outside, on the other side of the road. He's the one who came to see Charlotte.
Are you sure?
He's followed me, I tell you. This is coming. I'm sorry, I'm going to have to go. As the custodian of this material, you have a great responsibility. Protect it at all costs. Goodbye, Arthur.
Are you
Good luck.
Sure?
Yes, I'm sure.
Look, there's a door over that way, at the back. Go out that way.
He's coming over.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Bye-bye.
It's the middle of the night, and I can't sleep. Well, I have slept, but I was woken by a strange dream, and I'm feeling anxious, isn't the right word. I'm feeling rattled, I'll be honest. I don't scare easily, but meeting Mark today and seeing the fear on his face as he left the cafe. And just all these questions too. Who sent me the original wax cylinder? Who are these guys who are leaning on respectable academics at universities? I have no idea. I really have no idea. Why is all this happening now? Why are these things coming together now? I don't know. I've left the material downstairs. I haven't looked through it, the stuff that Mark gave me. The wax cylinder's there, and I'm going to play that in the morning, but I didn't have the backbone, maybe. I didn't have the heart to listen to it when I got in. And play that in the morning and find out what it says. And in the meantime, hope to get some sleep. And hopefully not have another dream like that. I was climbing some stairs and opened the door at the top of the stairs into an attic, a big attic space. There was nothing in there except a little girl in the centre sitting on a stool. And she beckoned me towards her and I said, are you Popo Anjinu? And she shook her head, no. And she beckoned me to come closer and then closer until I approached her, and she beckoned me then to lean in so that I could hear her whisper in my ear. This is what she said.